On WGN, Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors joins us on the phone now. Audrey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, John?
Good. It's about 40 degrees cooler than when we were talking last week when you were here downtown. But that's okay. The sun just peaked out here downtown, so I'll take that. Audrey, you were here in the studio last week, and we were reacting rather quickly to what had happened the night before. And what had happened last Friday night was the events at 31st Street Beach, where hundreds of teens had gathered. A 14-year-old was injured in a shooting, and police had to disperse and get rid of them and the teens, and a car had set on fire, or maybe its battery exploded. There was conflicting information about that. And we chatted a little bit about that on the show and what the rights of parents are and what the responsibilities of the police are, maybe not knowing and maybe naively so that we were due for what I would say an even more high-profile gathering of teens and maybe some young adults, too, that led to a lot of people continuing that conversation throughout the week. I assume, Audrey, you saw what happened on Saturday night, just hours after we chatted here downtown.
And I did, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think we can be grateful no one is dead because of it. That's always something. But it raised a lot of the same issues, and we have chatted all week about them now on WGN. And I just wanted to ask you about your reaction to that. First and foremost, what did you think when you saw what had happened downtown?
Well, I think, like a lot of people, we've been talking to other people and seeing what they think, and they were actually kind of surprised it was so quickly again, a second night in a row, different, and that it was a more public access place going on Michigan Avenue, Millennium Park, things like that, where there's a lot of tourists, and then how extreme and how quickly everything escalated.
Right. And I guess we have to ask the question that a lot of people have been asking. Why can't you arrest 300 teens all at once?
Right. Logistically, it's near impossible. I mean, I know CPD, Chicago Police Department, they have a significant amount of officers, but they can't literally process, arrest, book every single student or minor or adult that's out there. And plus, just because you're with someone or you're at a location where someone else does something dangerous doesn't mean that you're necessarily an accomplice. So you can't round up every teen. You actually have to see what's going on. And I know that Chicago, they have been putting some policies and tactical issues in place because now they know what to expect. But when it first happened on Friday night at the beach, they weren't quite as maybe prepared.
Right.
As to who would be able to stop CTA trains or close CTA trains or things like that. But I think now there's more intergovernmental cooperation and discussion about who can take the lead and what steps they are able to take. And I think same with officers, they're concerned because officers are not necessarily allowed to do foot pursuits. So they're concerned because officers want to take action, but they also know that if they do a foot pursuit and something happens, they have liability. They could be suspended, fired, or even possibly charged criminally. So those types of issues need to be ironed out for the officers that are on the streets trying to figure out what to do and how they should respond to everything that they're seeing.
Let's say they had the logistics to arrest everyone. Can you arrest teenagers for gathering together in groups? If 10 of them jump on top of a CTA bus and jump up and down, can you arrest 100 of them because they were there cheering them on?
I suppose legally. Technically you can. Right. Legally, it would never work because I suppose you can argue as a prosecutor that those other teens are encouraging or inciting them to do these acts, but how are they aiding them? They're just encouraging them to do that. Is that sufficient? I don't necessarily know if the judges would all agree to that. And obviously defense attorneys like myself would argue that that's not sufficient just to be cheering.
Right. Or just happen to be there. Now, what happens if there's a curfew law that they have violated? Is that an arrestable offense for a juvenile?
No, curfew laws are really not arrestable offenses. However, you could take them all, detain them, bring them down to police departments, and then figure out where their legal guardians and parents are and have their parents come to take them home. Because obviously, officers are not going to be responsible for driving all these teenagers home because you don't know how far away they live, just the logistics of all that, how to transport all the kids home.
So you could detain them for violating a curfew. Would they see a judge that night or no? They just get a ticket and then the parents are responsible for getting them.
Correct. They would just be given citations and the parents would be responsible to pick them up and then eventually go to court.
And I think I know the answer about why they don't do that, but can you explain why they don't just detain 300 to 500 kids and have the parents can pick them up?
Right. Logistically, it just wouldn't work. How do you transport all the kids? You can't necessarily put all of them in a minivan or a wagon or a bus down to a police department. And then logistically, once you're at the police department, there isn't space to house and hold all these juveniles. And then logistically, to figure out all the kids' names and their parents and contact information, some teenager may not even have any ID on them. So if a teenager refuses to say who they are, then you have all these people trying to figure out their parents and those students' names and how to get them in touch with the right person and where they're supposed to go.
A lot of people have been asking, can't you arrest and charge these people for mob action? Is there any mob action laws that this would maybe qualify under?
Definitely. You can absolutely arrest them for a variety of misdemeanor offenses, mob action or criminal damage to property, or some of the most serious ones, that couple that got beaten and robbed. Obviously, you can charge them with robbery and theft. You definitely can. But logistically, again, it just gets to be complicated for the police department, law enforcement, prosecutors, and the judicial system that's already overwhelmed. But yes, all these students could be arrested for these things.
Okay.
But
go ahead.
Yes, sorry. But then they may not be detained. So if the crime is not serious enough, such as mob action, they would just get arrested, given a ticket to appear in court. They wouldn't be detained in the youth home or the juvenile jail.
Okay. What about the argument of, well, charge their parents with a crime? Have parents committed crimes if they don't know where their kids are?
Right. Unfortunately, no. Depending on the age of a child, if they are extremely young or preteen, yes, a parent could be charged perhaps with that. If they're older teens, 15, 16, not really. There really isn't anything that a parent can be criminally charged for. However, if they're juvenile, their child is charged with the crime, the parents would be responsible for the child's damages that the child caused. And so the parents would be legally responsible to pay for the damage to the person that's injured or property that's damaged.
Okay. So if they charge the juvenile with, you know, busting up a police car, the parents could theoretically be responsible for paying the city for that.
Correct.
Okay, what about parents who say, well, I've always been told that I I need to be really vigilant about if there's a party at my house, because if a kid drives home drunk, I can be charged for alcohol being served on my property. Why can't we charge parents? Like, is there, you see what I'm kind of asking? Like, is there any correlation to what we see happening downtown that there could be charges for that? Or is that completely so different that it doesn't make any sense?
I suppose if prosecutors want to get creative, they could try to argue that leap, that there's a nexus of similarity. However, a parent is not necessarily legally responsible for a public area that they don't have control over. Whereas in their home, they know that there's teenagers there, or they know that there's alcohol in their home that isn't locked up. So even if you don't believe that your teenager is going to be using and drinking your alcohol, if they do or their friends get into it, you're still legally responsible for what's inside your home and inviting people inside your home. Whereas on the beach, you're not necessarily responsible. However, I suppose if your child took alcohol from your home or if it took your weapon, then a parent would be legally responsible or could be legally responsible and criminally charged for a crime for allowing their juvenile to get access to their alcohol and weapons that they then use to commit a crime.
Good point about the weapons. Number one, that complicates the logistics of things. I've talked to police officers who are fearful in those situations of escalating the situation. And I'm about to make a big leap, Audrey, so just bear with me. I shouldn't even say this, but I'm not comparing these two things, except on one little instance. On January 6th, a lot of people wondered, why didn't the guards, although one woman was shot and killed, fire their weapons at the protesters? And you ask them, and they say, we were just trying to defuse, delay the situation to protect the people we are sworn to protect and not escalate it. This is not the same scenario at all, but I see why police do not want to escalate situations when they, similar to on January 6th, aren't aware or don't know exactly who has a weapon, how quickly it could escalate. And that is a concern from a logistic perspective. Right, Audrey?
But absolutely. All these police departments have policies for use of force, use of deadly force, use of your weapon. So if an officer impermissibly uses a weapon and discharges it, the officers could be suspended, fired, or, as we've seen across the nation, criminally charged and sentenced to prison.
Right.
So that's one of the things. Officers cannot use their weapons to disperse a crowd. They have to try to figure out other non-lethal tactics pursuant to their police department policies.
And even if they like rolled up a van and started arresting people legally, and they were not violating a single law, and the police officers were acting completely the way they should, there is concern about what that can do to the tensions in the crowd, correct?
Correct, right, because people could think that if a SWAT team or officers roll up like that, it's escalating the situation, causing a panic to ensue, and that it may just further fan the flames of the teenagers who are aggravated, or if they see a friend or a loved one that is getting impermissibly or what they think improperly arrested or treated by a police officer, then you're just escalating things even further.
Right. So when people say, look, there's people jumping on a CTA bus, why are police not jumping up on top of them, dragging them to the ground, and dragging them to jail? Boy, that would feel good, and that makes a lot of sense to me. But when you're right in that moment, and there's you're outnumbered, and you have no idea how many weapons are there, sometimes letting something happen and hoping and praying and trying to shepherd people away from the situation to defuse it calmly might be the outcome that saves the most lives.
Absolutely. And then officers are also thinking, well, these aren't 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, or 50-year-old adults. These are juveniles, teenagers that could be 12, 13, 14 years of age. So if you have a grown adult police officer pulling off or being aggressive with a 14-year-old girl, that raises further red flags for the public's perception of law enforcement. And it actually ties the arms of law enforcement as to how they can respond and act when it's a juvenile that they're dealing with as opposed to an adult.
Yeah. Audrey, I have a great question. I'm going to give it to you, but then we have to take a break. The 630 wants to know, why can't police use the same procedures as January 6th? Again, we're not comparing the two, but there are similarities in that there's a lot of people gathered. Why can't they use video and social media to identify and arrest? Do we have the resources for that? We'll get Audrey's opinion after this. AndersonAA.com is where you can find more about Audrey Anderson and what she does. 630-877-5800 is the number. We'll get the answer to that after this on WGN. Okay, it's 2:51 here on WGN. We continue our chat with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. We're talking about the mayhem in the downtown area, what we can do about it, what we can't do about it from a legal perspective and a policing perspective. Audrey Anderson is a juvenile defense attorney now, but spent many years as a state's attorney or working in the state's attorney's office. Am I getting that right, Audrey? Were you a state's attorney or did you work in the state's attorney's office?
Right. I worked for the state's attorney, so I was an assistant state's attorney.
That's still pretty darn good. We'll take that, Audrey. You're an expert at this stuff. The question before the break was, okay, I get that we maybe can't arrest people all at once in the moment, but can police use video, social media? Boy, there's a lot of it. Try to identify and arrest these kids that are responsible. Is this a resources thing? Is this a they're juveniles thing? Why can't we do that?
Actually, law enforcement does do that. So with regards to this, I know that they do have people that are monitoring social media. And then also, not only for these types of crimes, for all different types of crimes, police do get people to send in videos, surveillance cameras, other social media postings, and then they're able to backtrack it and figure out and identify who people are in these videos. However, unfortunately, that takes time. And as officers are doing these investigations, it's all confidential. They don't want to actually necessarily always say where they are in the process. So this is absolutely something that police officers are using. I'm sure that they've been using it for these cases. I know that they've used it for cases in the past, but it's not an instantaneous result.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's other news then that pops up. So it's, weeks later is when they finally are able to make an arrest, but that's not necessarily as newsworthy as when these events and these pop-up parties first start.
Yeah, I see the texter's point, though, because, like, when the Department of Justice, who has exponentially more resources, after January 6th, they would hold these press conferences and they'd publish on social media, like, here's a picture of this person. We're looking for them. Does anyone know who it is? Maybe they do this and I don't know, but I don't see a lot of that from CPD in these sorts of cases. Maybe they want to save those resources to solving murders, which I know they're trying to do a better job of too. But I don't know. Maybe you find the 10 people that were jumping on the bus or setting the car on fire. You put their photos out there and say, anyone got any information? I don't know, Audrey, what do you think about that?
No, that is something that they do. However, the fact is, since these or those people that may have committed the crime are actually juveniles, officers are more restricted, so they can't publish that type of information. So if they are under the belief that it is a 16-year-old as opposed to an 18-year-old, or if it's close, the officers have to err on the side of cautious and not caution and not publish that information.
So there are rules against them saying, find this kid.
Correct.
Okay. And that's why a lot of journalists, we don't publish names of juvenile defendants for that same reason, and juvenile victims, too. Hadn't even thought about that, but that's a great point, right? You don't want to face the police don't want to face the DOJ for breaking these rules either. Okay. If they were to arrest people and find that they had weapons and those weapons were illegal, do you think that would be a wise step to take? The one that you mentioned about getting parents held accountable if they were the parents' weapons?
Yes, I think that's an excellent step, an excellent tool. Those are difficult cases to prosecute because they aren't commonly done. It's a fairly new and recent phenomenon that police officers, prosecutors are doing that, taking those steps. So it's very infrequent. So it could be the leading trend or something that curbs it. But a lot of times parents may take precaution and may put and lock up a weapon, but somehow their teen got access to it.
Yeah.
So I think it really has to be on a case-by-case basis.
It's a hard case to prove, too, right? I think that's what you're alluding to.
Very hard.
All right, Audrey, thanks for shining some light on some of these questions that we have. We'll do it again soon, I promise. AndersonAA.com is where people can reach you, right?
Yes, definitely.
608-777-5800. And who should be reaching out to you?
Anyone that has a criminal investigation or law enforcement reached out to them about them, or especially if they've been reached by law enforcement because of something that their child is being investigated for, or law enforcement wants to question their child.
You can be pro-law enforcement and also pro-making sure your kid has legal representation when they talk to law enforcement, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Those are not opposing viewpoints to have, to know your rights and also still support what police are trying to do. Audrey, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, okay?
Yes, thank you again for asking me.